Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, and if the name sounds familiar to you, it is because earlier this year he came on the program and we had the most interesting time. In fact, there was so much to talk about, we really didn't get round to everything, and I was delighted to have the opportunity to have him back today. So, welcome to the program again, Dr. Kevin.
I am so happy to be back, and I can almost guarantee you, call it a psychic prediction, we will still not get around to talk about everything we'd like to talk about today.
Well, that's very nice. I like that idea. It's not that long since I spoke to you, but nevertheless, has anything exciting happened to you?
I'm trying to exactly remember where I was the last time I spoke with you, because there's been a lot of exciting things that have been happening, but so much has been happening that I sometimes lose track of the timeline. But
yes.
To give a brief, my own radio show was picked up for syndication. I don't know if that had happened last time I talked to you.
Right.
So bumping up me from where I was into a much larger stage, so that's pretty exciting news on this side.
Mm.
And I'm in the process of moving.
Oh, right.
I don't know if that was going on. It's kind of interesting. I'm actually moving from the coast of Maine to Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, you don't move without some reason. Is that a business move?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. It is a spirit-driven move.
Oh, right.
And that's a wonderful place to start, because one of the things is, you know, when I first started my current practice, which has been almost 19 years, I
yeah.
started it because I got a message from Spirit to go back to my roots. And I knew that meant go back to my grandmother telling me that I had this gift from God, you
yeah.
know, and that, you know, and basically I need to bring this gift to the world. So I left 12 years of corporate, you know, walked away from everything, moved back to the home area I was brought up in, and set up a spiritual coaching and counseling practice. I actually started by doing psychic readings again, because I'd done them years before professionally, but
yes.
evolved it into what I'm doing now. And that was really a spirit-driven message. I had sat down and said, and the funny thing is because I had asked for it, because I said that I realized that I needed to surrender, that I didn't have the joy in my life that I knew my life was capable of, and that whatever Spirit wanted me to do, wherever Spirit wanted me to go, I would do it. And within an hour of sitting there and sincerely asking that question, I had my answer. That's
mm-hmm.
how quickly it came. And within 6 months, I had stepped out of the business I had liquidated everything, and I had moved about 1,000 miles. And then after being there for a couple of years and really getting things going, and having lots of people, you know, really not believe that I could make a living, that I could do this. You know, we're talking about the very early 90s, and when I said, you know, that I had this message that I needed to come back and you know, that I was going to make a full-time living as a spiritual healer, everyone said, you can't do that. I had all these naysayers. They were like, nobody makes a full-time living just being a spiritual healer. You know, you have
mm-hmm.
to do something, or you have to have a real job, or you have to have a spouse that supports you.
Yes.
And, you know, and I sat there and kind of weighed what they were saying in one hand, and I weighed what my message from God was in the other hand, and I would look at these people and say, you know, well, tell you what, I'm going to do what God told me, and if God lets me down, I'll come back and see what you think.
Yes.
And I started my practice that way, and you know, a couple of years into it, I got a message that I needed to sell everything and go on the road, that's where I was needed, and I spent 2.5 years on the road, traveling
mm-hmm.
around out of the back of my, in my car, with complete faith that there would be places for me to stay, people that needed to hear what I had to say, that I'd be able to fully support myself, take care of myself, and it happened. And I spent 2.5 years doing that, living in faith. And so, you know, with this background, and, you know, and I could go on, but when this past March, my long-term relationship came to an end, and when it came to an end, and it came very harmoniously, very lovingly, that it was just our dance was over. We both knew our dance was over, and I got very quiet, and I was like, my time here is done. I just knew it. It was like, I'm moving. It's time for me to go somewhere else. And I spent from March until September saying to Spirit, I will go wherever you want me to. Make it effortless. Because one of the things that people who live lives that, you know, even people that live lives that are spiritually driven, that have strong life force energy, and I've got incredibly strong life force energy, and I have an incredibly strong personality and will. You know, in fact, one of the nicknames that people have for me is they call me the tank. And that as a tank, I can go in and, you know, I don't know that I can't do anything. I don't know that anything is impossible. The other thing is that sometimes I can't always tell the difference from a true spiritual message to some kind of ego construct, belief system, something creating or molding a reality that I then make happen, because I can make almost anything happen.
Yes.
And so when I knew that I was leaving where I was living, I knew that the world was taking me to a different level, that somehow I had brought some kind of karmic dance into play, that I had danced it for 6.5 years with my life partner, and that when we ended it, that I was going someplace new, and I said, I don't want to get attached. I don't want my brain to decide where I'm going to go, only to have it not work out or be difficult or be a struggle, because it really wasn't where Spirit was telling me the next part of my adventure lied. So I kept saying, effortless. I want this to be effortless. You show me the direction. I will look in that direction. If everything falls into place, I will go there. Because I have faith. I trust. I know that if I follow this guidance, everything will be okay. And I got a couple of false leads. I mean, I'd suddenly get a lot of energy about a place. I might get invited there. It would come across my reality. I'd do a little research on the internet. I'd have one of my staff people look at what would it be like for me to move my business there. And it would kind of be there underneath the surface. And then suddenly the energy would go away. And I'd say, like, okay. I'd hit some kind of wall. And I'd say, okay, well, if you don't want this to happen, that's okay. And I went through that for 6 months. Now, I personally think that I went through it for 6 months because I've got a pretty strong will, because I can be pretty stubborn, and Spirit really wanted me to get this message. Really, really, really surrender. And I surrendered when I left my corporate world. I surrendered when I went on the road, you know, and I went on the road actually twice. I didn't even mention the second time. I did the same thing for over a year. But this somehow was different. I knew that there was something very important at stake. And so when the idea of moving to Phoenix, now Phoenix is almost 3,000 miles away from me. I'm moving from the coast of Maine to the high deserts of Arizona. Mm. But it came up. And when first somebody brought me to the suggestion, a very close good friend of mine who actually co-hosts one of my radio shows with me, she said, you know, she started talking to me about Phoenix. And I said, you know, I've always wanted to live in Phoenix, or at least the last 10 years. Both of my last long-term relationships and I talked about moving to Phoenix. I had looked houses in Phoenix before, but it was never time. And I went, you know, I've always wanted to go there. But then it seemed like the energy closed down. And I said, okay, it's going to be effortless. I need this, not that I won't put in the work, not that I won't do what it takes, but it needs to be effortless. And so what happened was I came to a place where she said, well, I'm going to go out and look for a place there. And I said, okay. I'm going to look at this. The energy came up, it went down, it came back up again. I went, and I was going to do round trip. And these are the kind of things. And this is what I want your listeners to hear. I want them to hear what I mean by effortless. Hmm. I was going to fly out of where I live to Phoenix, went online. There were round trip airline tickets for $197 American dollars. Really cheap. That's a really cheap air flight to go three quarters of the way across country round trip. But I had to wait for 2 or 3 days to coordinate with my friend who was going out. We go back. I look on the computer. I go to bring these tickets up. Now it's within 2 weeks of our depart time. They jumped up to $700. Okay. And I played and I went and I changed and I checked things and I went through all of this stuff. And after about 20 minutes, I stopped and I looked at Dara and I said, okay, this is it. And I do what I do. I know, and it's probably sounds hokey, but I actually look up to the sky when I do this. I always look up to the sky when I'm talking to spirit. And I said, the agreement was effortless. You don't want me to go to Phoenix. If that's not where you want me to move, that's fine. I'm not paying $700 for round-trip tickets. Either you make those $200 tickets show back up again, or I'm going to take it as a sign you don't want me to go. And that's okay. That's fine. I went on one more time, and I entered the same information exactly as I did before, and there was two tickets left for $197 that I could not find for over 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I booked them. And then just before I was getting ready to go, I had contacted a real estate agent. Let's look at some houses. If you really want me to move there. And there was, you know, we're having this whole, you know, the whole real estate crunch economy issue over here. And found a real estate agent. I have friends that live over there. They set me up with somebody. I went to pre-qualify for, you know, what kind of house I could buy. Well, because they've gotten so funky about loaning money and things around here, and they look at the last 2 years, and 2 years ago, I spent the first part of the year taking care of my dying father, so my income went down. Nobody wanted to loan me money. And so now it's like, okay, Spirit, what are you doing here? I got the tickets. Maybe I'm just supposed to go with my friend. I can let this go. If I'm not meant to buy a house, if I'm not meant to live there, that's okay. I can stay where I'm at. There's no reason I can't. If you want me there, however, something's going to show up. And I literally heard in my head, as I sat at the computer the next time, financed by owner. I said, okay. I typed it into my computer. It comes up on my computer screen. There's all these houses where private people will finance you if you want to buy a house. And I said, okay, so I'll check this out. That's what I heard in my head. And I checked it out, flew over to Phoenix. I looked at 8 houses. The 7th house I walked in, I knew it was it. Made the offer. Boom. Everything was accepted, signed, sealed, delivered. And in like less than 3 weeks, I own a house in Phoenix.
Oh, wonderful.
That quickly. And it just, and you know, and these are just some of the highlight stories. I mean, there were just more things, you know. I'm talking, you know, now I'm saying, well, you know, I'm going to spend part of my time on the East Coast seeing clients because I've got a very big practice. I see some clients on phone, so that's not a big deal. And that's the other thing that happened. When I was like, tell me, you know, like give me a sign. If you want me to go to Phoenix, I'll go. Well, the station that approached me and wanted to syndicate my radio show called Voice America, they're in Phoenix. I get a call from one of my staff people in the middle of a client day saying, this station wants to syndicate your radio show. They have like 750,000 listeners. Are you interested in talking to them? I'm like, absolutely.
Yes.
Who are they? This is who they are. Where are they out of? They're out of Tempe, Arizona, which is a suburb of Phoenix. And that was in like within 48 hours of me saying, if you really want me to go to Phoenix, send me a sign.
Well, well.
That's what I mean by effortless.
Yeah.
So there's the story for you. I'm sorry. I probably went on too long. But,
oh, no, that was a wonderful story, and it just shows, if you have faith in spirit, what can be done. I mean, I have heard stories from other people of a similar vein, so I know it works, but maybe some people find it very hard to pack their case and go where spirit direct them.
Well, and I think, you know, and it is, and we're taught, you know, and this is one of the problems, is we're taught to be fearful. We're taught to live in fear, you know, from a very young age. Don't touch, don't do, don't. And I know some of that is practical, but not all of it. And you can educate a child that there is, you know, that there's something that they should not do, or not to, quote unquote, not to don't do, without making them fearful. We make our children fearful of living. And I was just reading an article, because, you know, I do a lot of current topics, even though it's a spiritually based show that I have. I very much am all about current topics from a spiritual perspective. And I was reading this very interesting topic saying that, you know, there are no more child abductions now than there were 50 or 75 years ago. There has not been an increase in children who actually get abducted out of, you know, out of neighborhoods or out of their family's backyard. It's the same amount of kids that got abducted 50 years ago. And I can't remember what the number is. I don't have the article in front of me, but it's a fairly low number. Not that any abduction is okay, but it's a fairly low number. It hasn't increased. It stayed right within the same range ever since they've been keeping records of this stuff. But we, because of mass media communication and the fact that everything's a soundbite and the next thrill story, have made it like, this is happening, you know, children get abducted every day, you can't let the kid play in the dooryard, you know, if you don't, take your kid to school with an Uzi gun beside you, you're gonna lose them, is what media would have us think.
Right.
They've made us fearful, they've made our kids fearful, they've made them afraid to play, they go out, they don't get to imagine anymore, they don't get to build forts, they don't get to go into the woods, they don't get, you know, and none of the things that have happened to children today aren't things that haven't been happening for hundreds of years.
Right.
And they're sad, and they, you know, and definitely nobody wants to sit here and, you know, say that it's okay they happen, it's not, but it's no greater than it was before. But we have become such a fear-based society, obsessed with thrills and obsessed with gore and violence and horrible things. And we make our kids afraid to live. We make ourselves afraid to take risks. We don't trust God. We trust the evening news. What's up with that?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's very true, and I do feel that there are certain parties that have an interest in maintaining that position because it's a way of controlling people.
Absolutely. And we go to one of my favorite terms, which is sheeple, sheep people.
Yeah.
You know, we create sheeple. We create people that don't trust themselves, they don't trust their ability to make decisions, they become apathetic, they end up on tons of medications, they're depressed, they're this, they're that. These guys, you know, and you know what? Drugged out kids, drugged out adults that walk around like zombies are very easy to manage.
Yes.
They don't challenge. You know, before pharmaceuticals, it used to be we did it with whips and chains. It used to be that if somebody, you know, the whole error that we went through of giving people lobotomies, now we've decided it's inhumane to cut out part of their brain and make them basically a vegetable alive for life. So what do? We give them pharmaceutical lobotomies.
Yes.
And that's even more cruel because every so many years the body will rebel and they have to be taken off all the medications. They get tied down to beds for days on end, suicidal, screaming, hollering, and miserable amounts of pain until they can load them up on the new medications and send them back out to lead these pathetic lives instead of helping them, instead of empowering them, instead of working with them.
Yes, indeed. Can I go back to the beginning of the program when you ran through the various things that have happened, and you possibly haven't cast your mind through everything, but did your new book come out?
No, the new book has not come out. I'm afraid that I got kidnapped by the search and by a huge surgence of my client practice. Wow. Actually working with people. I'm actually sitting on three books that are almost completed, but not quite, and then one that I'm in the throes of trying to finish getting down. And I know that one of the things is once I get to Phoenix and I get some different balance going on in my life, that I'm going to be able to really get these things out. But unfortunately, even though I'm going to be coming back to the East Coast once or twice a month to see my clients, once I announced that I was moving to Phoenix, it was like everybody in the world came out of the woodwork wanting to spend as much time as they could with me, clients, students, I'm not even talking family and friends.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like good riddance.
Yeah. Now, the book I wanted to refer to was Managing the Gifted ADD Child. What I wanted to ask you was, what do you think causes ADD?
Well, ADD is part of the evolutionary process. It is actually man evolving into another level of his own expansion and growth. I look at ADD itself as that it started coming in an evolutionary nature in the 1850s. Before then, we've always had people that would have been considered by our standards today as ADD. Leonardo da Vinci was your perfect ADD poster child. Socrates, people who throughout history had a completely different way of functioning, looking, and being in the world. And when the world was smaller, or the known world, I should say, was smaller, they could pick the world up and almost change the direction of it because of their sheer force of nature or personality. Back around the 1850s, however, we started seeing a steadily increasing number of those people who seemed to be out of sync in the normal way of experiencing the world. And they became the architects of the 20th century. One of my favorite ones to pick on is, Alexander Graham Bell, was considered the village idiot and was never going to make anything out of his life and dropped out of the education he was getting at the age of 16. And if we could have gone back in time and medicated him, we'd still be talking on two tin cans and a piece of string.
Yeah.
Okay, so these were the architects of the 20th century. They were Einstein, Edison, Bell. They gave us the telephone, the telegraph. They gave us TV, radio. They came in with an expanded awareness, with more cylinders firing, with being able to see things from a number of different perspectives, instead of just seeing things in either an analytic perspective or an abstract perspective that only gives you a limited number of points on the line as answers. They actually think in circles. Like if you think about dropping a stone in a pond and seeing these circles going out, that they think and they will look at things all around. We're talking about accessing more of the mind in a more conscious way. Heightened sensitivity on all levels, physical bodies that seem to process energy better, mental bodies, intellectual bodies that bring in lots of information and sometimes an overwhelming amount of information. Emotional bodies that were structured differently, but we look at these these individuals, and what they did is they created the ability for more ADD people to come in. To me, like, the ultimate quote-unquote ADD creation was the internet, because the ADD brain loves to learn. But it loves to learn, it loves to challenge, it loves to invent, it loves to reinvent, it loves to teach. It's naturally rebellious, so it's going to challenge the status quo. And that's the only way we ever move humanity forward, is to challenge the status quo. That, you know, to challenge how we think, how we act, how we do. And so these increasing numbers come in of individuals come in, and they're starting to ping off each other like a ping pong ball in an old-fashioned, pinball machine, where the ball goes around and somebody over here creates a microchip, and somebody over here create some kind of new transistor board or whatever, and somebody over here, and they're pinging off each other, and then, you know, again, you end up with the internet, which is limitless, non-stop information, which is what the ADD mind is. Mm. Is this constant reaching for what is its passion, what does its mind want to wrap itself around and grow and work with. So ADD supported itself, as in any evolutionary process. You know, the evolution, when we talk evolution, it is that which changes the environment, okay, and it is that that is changed by the environment. It's an adjustment to things going on in an environment. And humanity had plodded along in a very stately way until the mid-1800s. And then it took off like a rocket ship in the 20th century. Mm. And the architect of that rocket ship was the ADD brain.
Wow.
Now, as we had an increased number of institutions that gained more and more power, you know, it used to be that the two big institutions were simply the church and the state. But as we created an educational institution, as more society institutions showed up, as we became more regulated, the ADD mind became the bad guy, because it didn't do things the way the institutions wanted them done. And, you know, I have often said that the educational institution looks at the ADD child the same way that a computer looks at a computer virus. It knows it's there to destroy it. And the ADD mind is there to destroy the educational institution that we've created, because it no longer works. It no longer functions. It doesn't serve the purpose it was created to. But it's become such an institution. It's become such a dinosaur. And people who are afraid of change rally up beside it and prop it up and put tons of money and energy into it and wave flags around it and call themselves patriots to save the educational level of the free world, when actually they're the biggest distractors. They're the people that cause the most problem, because if you put the same amount of money in recreating an educational institution that would work, and the ADD mind will be the one that will show us what that looks like, we would be far ahead. But, you know, institutions become entities that their number one goal is to save themselves, to preserve themselves. Like any organism, it's trying to survive. And it looks and it looks at these people, and, you know, and some of these institutions look at people like you and me, and we're the virus. We're challenging, you know, century-old thought processes.
Yes. I do understand, and I go along with this, that there has been for some years now slightly more developed souls coming into life, and these are, to some extent, the ADD youngsters that you're talking about. And they've given them names such as Star Children, Indigos, Rainbow Children, and so forth. Have you heard those expressions used?
Yes, I have. And, you know, it really started with Indigo. The big first name was Indigo. And I'm going to put it right on the line because I have a problem. And, you know, and the part of the problem was when I first got drawn into work with the ADD stuff, in the alternative spiritual community, the big book was the Indigo Child. And they were saying, oh, we're seeing these children, and they have different colors in their auras, and, you know, and they're talking about being from a higher vibration. And, you know, at the end of the day, in a lot of ways, I'm the most practical, pragmatic, spiritual person you'll ever meet. I'm like, okay, well, give it to me, A, so I can understand it, B, so that it makes sense in my life, C, that it's somehow going to empower or make my life better. I don't like the airy, fairy, way out there, it's going to help you in three lifetimes, or, you know, oh, you are a Venetian, and so therefore you don't do well on this planet, so you have no responsibility for your actions. Crap, because that's what it is. And when I looked at the Indigo book when I was doing my work with ADD, one of the things that it said in the original Indigo book is, we are not talking about ADD here. Well, yes, they were. Now, ADD is a horrible label. ADD, ADHD is a horrible label. It was created by an institution supported by the government whose major thing was how to create another income flow. How can we find something that we can put a stamp on that we can prescribe a pill to? Let's be really honest. This was all about profit. However, the Indigo Child, all you're seeing is you're seeing the spiritual dimension of the ADD. And every child, and, you know, again, I'm talking about children because all of my ADD kids are kids from 8 to 80. They never grow up in some ways. They're always childlike. There's a childlikeness to them. All of my kids are different, are going to be differently, uniquely impacted by that thing we call ADD. And some of them are going to be more impacted on the spiritual level. But all the ADD kids have more things going on the spiritual level. They tend to be more empathetic. They tend to be more psychic. They tend to be more connected. But some of them were more clearly impacted on the mental level, where there was so much going on that they didn't know how to bring it into focus and deal with it, which was exacerbated by bad environment, bad parenting, bad diet, bad educational systems. All sorts of things could make it worse, physically, emotionally, all of these things. And so what they tried to do is, as far as I'm concerned, they left my kids in what I call the Ritalin noose. All of these nice, big-hearted, airy-fairy spiritual people said, oh, the Indigo Children, and they're special, and we need to treat them this way. And we're not talking about the ADD kids. Let them go screw. That's what I heard the book say. Instead of saying, wait a second, first of all, these are all our kids. And none of our kids need to be deserved to be treated like this. None of our kids need to be drugged into insensibility. None of our kids need to be treated like lepers. And then take your head out of your backsides and look and say, you know what? Those ADD kids are pretty spiritual too, but, you know, they're getting such a hard time. Their self-worth and self-esteem is getting so banged up. Their diet is so poor that the school system they're going to is so inadequate. You know, the parents that they have are so clueless about how to do decent parenting that spiritual side gets lost. Oh, my, let's rush to their aid and help them. Let's be there for them. Let's show people that they have the same thing that the Indigo Children have. And now I hear the rainbow, and I hear the crystal, and I hear this. And I'm like, You know what? Put away the fluff and puff terms. Let's talk about our kids. All of our kids deserve a certain amount of being who they are, feeling good about that, getting empowered, being recognized as spiritual beings, and being moved forward as the valuable thing they are, not as a commodity to make the bottom line of some pharmaceutical company make more money, not as a bargaining chip to whether we put money here or there that they're not here to be used as a weapon or as a get even or as something that could be bartered across the table in a negotiation at some meeting of Congress or Parliament. You know?
Now, Dr. Kevin, I'm going to take you off that subject because you still haven't got round to one that I want you to talk about, which we didn't cover before. You did warn me we wouldn't get through it. I'd like you to tell our listeners the story about how you got involved in pendulum testing and your experiences with it, because it's my guess, probably quite a number of our listeners probably try using the pendulum, and they would be pleased to hear what you think about it.
Pendulums, yes. Because, as you know, I have got a DVD out on pendulums.
Yes.
Which I'm going to be shameless here and say, weboflight.com is my website if people want to come to it.
Yes.
Pendulums, really, I mean, pendulums have been around for a long time. And what they are is they are something which we can have affected. And this is the thing with pendulums. They're a divination tool. Let's start right there. Pendulums are a divination tool. They're a way that we can use to connect into divine energy. And if you look at pendulums and you also look at divining rods, you know, those things that they use to go around and find water?
Yes.
There's some of the same concepts there. You're using an inanimate object that can be moved by energy, which you can then access to get spiritual guidance. Now, love pendulums as a tool to get some answers or insight and guidance. You can use them at a multitude of different levels. You can use them very simply for yes, no, maybe. You can use them to actually go many more levels deeper into getting an answer, insight, and guidance on a question. But you have to know how to use them correctly. And it's really funny because, you know, I've done a lot of work through New Age shops. I've done a lot of expos. People will come to me and go to use, you know, they'll see the DVD. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, I love my pendulum. I have a pendulum. I've used a pendulum for years. And I'll go, great. So how do you protect it? What do you mean? Well, how do you know where the answers are coming from? What do you do? Are you very specific? Do you actually set your pendulum up each and every time to verify what means what? How do you know it's not being influenced by playful or even benign or malign spirits or influences? Oh, well, I'm just in white light. Okay, so, and you didn't answer my question. How do you know where your pendulum's answers are coming from? And how do you know, and how do you separate to make sure that the energy that is not influencing the pendulum is your energy? Because we're all energy. If we want to think that a pendulum can be being moved by God, and a pendulum can get moved by God, it can also get moved by your spirit guides. It can get moved by the angels. It can also be moved by some low-flying energy or spirit that's hanging around that thinks it would be funny to make you look like a fool. It can be moved by somebody who has not pure intent. It can be taken over and be used against you. Or it can be your deep desire of what you want to hear. It can be your fears guiding the pendulum. So if you're not testing, if you're not, quote-unquote, programming your pendulum, if you're not being very clear in your protection and setting that up, then, you know, and that's why people sometimes get discouraged with pendulums. I have people that would come to my pendulum class and said, you know, I used the pendulum for a while, it seemed really good, it seemed really accurate, then suddenly it wasn't working, or then suddenly it just gave me a lot of wrong answers, and then I lost faith in it, but I really liked it. And I'm like, well, it's a spiritual practice. Did you do it as a spiritual practice? Did you, you know, actually, you know, did you actually go through a process of understanding how it worked and what you needed to do with it and how to work with it and understand it conceptually? Or was it just pretty on a tree and did you pick it up and did somebody say, oh, yeah, And this means yes, and that means no. Well, you know what? This doesn't always mean yes, and that doesn't always mean no. And so pendulums are one of those things that unfortunately have a lot of potential to be a nice, supportive clarification tool. You don't want to give your power away to it, like you don't want to give your power away to anything. You want to use it as you want to use all divination tools, a place with which to get more information with which to make better decisions. The pendulum is not supposed to make your decision. The tarot cards are not supposed to make your decision. Your astrology chart and what planet is in what house today is not supposed to make your decision. Okay? The psychic you go to is not supposed to make your decision. These are all things, you know, and I can't tell you how many times I've talked about this. I teach this in my classes. I pound it into my students' head. Intellect, intuitive. You're supposed to be using both. We're supposed to be bringing information in, and we're supposed to be gathering all that information. We're supposed to be weighing it, considering it, working with it. We're supposed to be moving it forward. And I'm going to tie this back to the first part of the show, when I was talking about making it effortless and deciding where to move. When Spirit sent me in a direction, I started gathering the intellectual information about it. How would blah, blah. What would it be like to move the business there? How could I make this happen? What was my side of the street? What was my responsibility in this if this is where I was supposed to go? I would accept that if Spirit gave me a clear message that was where I was supposed to go, but I would also use all my other sources of information to create a whole picture. You know, and sometimes people that just want to give their power away to the pendulum, to the psychic, to the astrology chart, to the tarot deck, to the animal cards, to the angel cards, whatever. They just want to give their power away to somebody. Don't get an accurate picture. Don't get a full picture. It wasn't just, was I going to move to Phoenix? It was, if I moved to Phoenix, when was I going to move to Phoenix? What was the correct timing? How was I supposed to structure it? Where was I being guided to make this a harmonious, joyful relocation? Where would I start putting my energies? How would I shift things? You know? And so, again, pendulums are a good divination tool, and they do work in a number of different ways, but all you're doing is you're taking a weighted object at the end of a piece of chain or a piece of string, and then you're allowing that energy to be influenced to give you some kind of information, and most people think in the yes, no, good, bad, maybe category, which way undersells what a pendulum can do for you. And then, when they don't want to take responsibility for their life, use it as something that will make the decision for them so they don't have to have the responsibility of making the decision for themselves.
Right. Just deal with this example now. If I use the pendulum on food and I said, is this food healthy for me? And it moved in a circular motion and I took that to be a yes. Are you saying that you should still give it other thought and not accept that?
Well, first of all, I would say is, did you ask your pendulum at the beginning to show you yes and no?
Right.
Or did you assume that the last time you used the pendulum that a circle meant yes and it still means yes? Second of all, I would ask you, who are you asking to answer the question? Who's influencing your pendulum to do that? Mm. And then, you know, part of it is, and this depends on how you ask the question, you know, because we are free will beings. If I was going to use the pendulum and I was trying to make a choice of foods, I would say, you know, and let's say I'm fighting being sick and my most important thing is to get healthy. I would say,
yes.
Is this the food that is in my highest and best good to get healthy? Not, you know, is this a positively charged food to me, or am I going to pay a price for eating this? Is this a negatively charged food for me? You know, so again, some of it is about the question. Now, again, depending on the weight of what it is, obviously moving 3,000 miles and asking which entree on the dinner plate are two different weights of questions. You know, would I believe a pendulum if a pendulum said, you know, because I use a different energy format than pendulums if I'm at a restaurant, because it's a little, though you could use a pendulum at a restaurant, I guess. I kind of do energetic weights on it, and I'll ask questions. Is this better or that better? Which is better for me? And sometimes I ask, which is physiologically better for me, or what's better for me emotionally? Sometimes, right. Sometimes I want my emotional body to be comforted, and sometimes that's okay. You know, so that's where I kind of look at it. In a very simple world, if you said, "Is this okay for me to eat? Is this a good choice?" Good choice is different than best choice. Is this a good choice? You ask it, say yes or no, it says yes or no. Now, the other question I would ask is, will I like it?
Yes. Now,
do you ever ask your food if not only does your body think it would be a good choice, but are you going to enjoy eating it? Because if you don't have any joy in eating it, that's actually going to take away from how good from your body it could be. Hmm. And that's a different question.
Yes. I suspect, by and large, I don't use a pendulum, incidentally, but I have a friend who uses it regularly. I suspect people believe they have a higher self, a higher source of knowledge, and they're really speaking to that when they ask the questions. Although you said yourself it can be moved by their guides.
Absolutely, and that's part of, you know, in all the work I do where anybody's trying to tap into any psychic abilities, you know, whether it's on your, you know, whether it's on my MI Psychic DVD or the Pendulums DVD, even on the, I'm going to be having come out at some point, a DVD on Intuitive Tarot, one of the first things they teach is a protection and intention statement. Know how to protect, know how to guide yourself. Know what that really means, understand it, formulate it for yourself, make sure you use it, because whenever you open yourself up, there are all different layers of energies and entities out there, and there are many things that can influence. And so if you're making a decision, and you're making an important decision, don't make assumptions. Find out. Make sure you're clear on who you want to do it. When I teach the class, you know, I actually give them different options, and I'll have them use their pendulum saying, you know, I want this time I am specifically asking for my higher self. This time I'm specifically asking for one of my spirit guides. This time I'm specifically, and make them, and they can start to feel the difference of how the pendulum moves by who they asked. It feels different to them. It moves different.
Hmm. And that's every very entity, interesting.
Hmm. Yeah, and every entity that uses it will use the pendulum differently. Yes, no, maybe will come out as different ways that the pendulum works. So, again, you know, it depends on how much you want to use a pendulum, what you want to use a pendulum for, but with anything else, be a wise consumer.
Hmm. Does it make any difference as to what the pendulum is made of?
Some things are more conductive to energy than others, and depending on what you're doing, it's kind of like, you know how some cars are kind of heavy and they steer kind of heavy, but that you feel safer in them. And some cars have feather light turning and stuff like this, but you wouldn't want to drive them necessarily in a really bad rainstorm or snowstorm. Think of a pendulum that way. A very light, easy to move, can almost be moved by breathing your breathing on it, doesn't take much energy for anything to influence it. You will probably get a more exuberant, better answer I mean, a more exuberant, quicker answer, not better, I'm sorry, quicker answer, because it will swing wildly, it will do everything. If you have a nice, really heavy pendulum, metal, you know, with a nice, heavy, weighted crystal or something on the bottom, then it's going to take more to move it, but when it moves it, it's really clear where it's going.
Yes, yeah. I would imagine that wood is possibly the lightest one. I don't think personally I would consider using plastic, for example.
No, and it's not going to be as good a conductor of energy.
Hmm.
You know, some things conduct energy better than others, and obviously anything that is natural is going to be a better conductor of energy. And now the other thing is it something that should feel good within your energy? So you want to have a crystal, if you're going to use a crystal, or if you're going to use metal, or if you're going to use, you know, something, have something that speaks to you, that feels good to you. Now the other side of that is, that means it's easier for your energy to move the pendulum if the pendulum feels like it's an extension of you. And this is where I laugh. I will stand there and I'll watch somebody that has a favorite pendulum, and it's their favorite crystal or their favorite, you know, symbol or shape. It's like part of their arm. It's just an extension of who they are. They'll ask the pendulum a question, and I'll psychically get the answer. Like, no, this is not good for you. And at the same time, I'll watch that pendulum say yes, because it's what they want. And all the pendulum is an extension of their own egocentric, ego-construct desires. And they love their pendulum.
I'm going to stop you there, Dr. Kevin, because we've literally got about a couple of minutes left, because I have to announce next week's program. But what I want you to do before I have to close the program is to confirm your site address again.
It is Web of Light, weboflight.com. And you can find my radio shows there. I have articles. I have a monthly newsletter you can sign up for and get my wisdoms and insights, videos, and that's where you go, and that's where you'll find me.
That's brilliant. Well, as before, it's been a really interesting program. And yet again, I wasn't able to ask you all the questions or thoughts I had in mind, but that was excellent. So thank you very much for coming on the program again. And without a doubt, I'll have to have you back yet again until we can finish our sessions. Anyway, I wish you the best of luck with your move. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you very much. Right, my friends, that was yet again a very interesting interview. And my guest next week will be Dr. Linda Backman and her husband, or rather who works with her husband, doing spiritual work and healing through their center in Boulder, Colorado. And Linda conducts soul regressions and trains others to do the work. And she's also brought out a new book called Bringing Your Soul to Light, Healing Through Past Lives and the Time Between. So that should again prove to be quite an interesting program. So I hope you can be with me then, and thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.